Hey, what's going on? This is the Educated Guest Podcast. I'm Justin. I'm your host. If this is your first time listening, thank you for choosing to be a part and making a choice to maybe try something new for yourself today in the realm of personal development, in the realm of artistic development, and in the realm of just overall liberal arts and interest in education. And secondly, if you've been here before, maybe it's one time, maybe it's 50 times, maybe it's 185 times, who knows? Thank you especially if you've been here since the beginning, 2.5 to 3 years ago, back in April of 2018. We were very interested in questions about the gap between the institution and the public, the gap between what is being learned and what is being taught inside the four walls of some of the most prestigious art institutions and art schools in the world, and what people on the street and what people in the public are trying to acquire, and how could you possibly reach both people at the same time? And that's what we're concerned with. So if you're somebody looking to start a studio, maybe you're fresh out of school, maybe you're looking for that extra boost, this is for you. If you're someone who's been working for a long time and looking to reinvigorate yourself and find enthusiasm, find vibrancy, find a different new commitment to your craft, this is for you. And maybe if you're somebody seeking, you know, that dream job of yours, to know what it takes to maybe separate yourself from the crowd, not in skill, but in mindset, this is also for you. So that said, we have three particular pillars of our pedagogical approach, the way that we talk about art, the way we talk about teaching, the way we talk about education as a whole. And it really starts with mind, and it starts with tactical development, and it ends with inspiration. So you will definitely get those three segments throughout the course of you listening to this platform and becoming a part of this community. 25,000 people around the world have tuned in over the past 2.5 to 3 years, and we're extremely excited about what's to come. So if any of this sounds like something you'd be into, you can actually become a deeper part of our community and becoming more ingrained into the fabric of what we talk about by going to educated-guest.com and subscribing to our newsletter there. We don't have a whole lot of correspondence going out. We're not that interested in badgering you and bothering you and filling your inbox with nonsense. Instead, we provide quality information we feel it's needed and keep you updated about things that we've got going on and different things we're thinking about, and we go from there. So all that said, we're going to hop into it today with another segment of our work study, another installment of our work study segment. Work study is what I mentioned about tactical tools, templates of developing your own practice and developing your own consistent way of working. And today we're dealing with a little bit of a tactical approach to how to wrestle with failure. This has come to mind particularly for me because, as many of you know, I've taken a step in my life, in my development, to take one step or two steps back, potentially to take 10 steps forward, as the saying goes. And I've re-enrolled in grad school after, you know, five years of working and achieving quite a lot. So even in the midst of achieving a lot, I've understood that there's something more to understand. There's another level of depth that I want to pursue. So I'm going to take a step and re-enroll. So I recently enrolled at Harvard Graduate School of Design, and it's a semester has been down, right? Like, we all know the time of the year, semester is over, first term is over, and pursuing a master's in architecture. So what that means for me is that a lot of what I thought I knew is being called into question, and a lot of what I thought I knew is being reinforced. So the difficulty has been in facing new types of failure, being a beginner, and facing fear, and also creating in spite of frustration. So a lot of things, you know, around failure, fear, and frustration have to do with, you know, the common tropes of lack, of less, of never, I'm never going to get good at this. I'm less than these people are. I lack the skills that these people do have. And you just go down a spiral. But instead of sort of focusing on the negative, what I'm going to do is focus on two things that have really helped me overcome these three emotions. They're some of the toughest emotions to deal with. I mean, I'm closer to the age of 30 than I am to the age of 20. So a lot of my forethought, a lot of my visioning, and a lot of my forecasting of my life has to do with much more mature decisions and a much more mature mindset than perhaps I had when I was 22, 23. And I say these things because it's tougher and tougher. I never estimated how tough it would be to be a beginner again. And it's been quite a while since I've been an absolute beginner at something, you know, that I hadn't, you know, and be in the proximity of others who weren't beginners. And I just imagine some of the things that I'm the best at are some of the toughest things to do on the planet, skill set wise. And people, it's been reinforced by many people. So isn't just me making it up. For example, I've been playing golf for 20 years of my life, right? So I've been playing since I was 7 or 6 years, you know, 7 or 8 years old, somewhere around there. So I've been playing for 2 decades. Now, if you go and ask anybody off the street to go hit a golf ball, they will look ridiculous. And this is not me talking from upon high. This is me with 2 decades of experience hitting a golf ball in a quality way, playing at the highest level, playing it in tournaments and competing and doing all that stuff, traveling. Much in the same way that somebody who's been playing basketball for that long has been knowing how to shoot a basketball. It's just second nature. So you're no longer concerned about how to explain the basics of something. Your concern is with how to simplify everything that you understand about it into something that doesn't crowd your mindset. So it's in another example of something I'm good at, and this is not a time for me to gloat. I'm getting somewhere with this point. I'm very good. I'm very confident in my skill set as a musician. And I've been doing that since I was 9 or 10 years old. I've been a classically trained musician, as well as working in the industry, all that good stuff. But my point in bringing these two things up is that it's been so long since I've taken on such a tough challenge from a beginner's mindset. Like, imagine if I can't imagine trying to learn how to play trumpet or read music at age 27. I can't imagine that. I can't imagine picking up a golf club and trying to hit it, and trying to hit the ball and even expect to be as good as the person swinging next to me at any point in my life at age 27. I can't imagine that. Yet here I am, and here many people are at age 27, 28, 29, 30, 33, 37, 45, trying to get a reinvigorated sense of enthusiasm in their life and trying to refocus on something that perhaps will carry them throughout the rest of their existence in this life form. And we can't seem to get past that feeling of how to deal with the fear. I'm not good at it. I'm not the best at it. Others aren't the best at it. No one's a master at that. Yet we all know for some reason that our joy is on the other side of that frustration. Our joy is on the other side of that fear. And our joy is on the other side of that failure. And something that's been extremely important for me, two things I'll boil it down to help me sort of overcome that. Number one is the truth and sort of the axiom that momentum will always supersede fear. Momentum will always supersede fear. So what does that mean? That means that if you're in sales and if you're trying to close a deal, if you're trying to get a client and you talk to one person once a week, talk to one new contact a week, how many eggs are you putting in how much pressure are you putting on yourself to achieve that one, to make sure that one sale, that means you have an 100% close rate, 100% closing the deal. And it's important to sort of acknowledge that many small firms and many small studios often only close at like a 10% rate, or they're already on retainer with people that they don't have to sell anymore. So when you consider that, that is probably the most arrogant thing. The most arrogant thing is to think that your amount of reps compared to the amount of reps of some other people that are successful should be that lopsided. And people talk about putting the work, people talk about putting the practice, but it's not necessarily I'm learning about the practice. It's not necessarily about the study. It's not necessarily about film study or anything like that, how many books you read. It's about how many things did you make? I'll put my chips on the person who's made. I mean, Pete Rock talks about it a lot, and he had, I get it confused because it's Pete Rock and Ninth Wonder and Kanye all had these things that are like systematic ways of making music. And Pete Rock, you said this thing, let's just call it 30 and 5 or something like that. Basically, he had to make 30 beats in 5 days. So whatever that number is, I mean, Kanye, the infamous line, or not infamous, but the famous line of 5 beats a day for 3 summers, or, you know, whatever that is for you, it's important that you understand to get that work in and not to focus on quality. There's a space that people need to have to not have to be worried about the quality of their work, where they can just get the reps in. You know, if you're being measured when you're practicing, or if you're being measured on, you know, every single attempt, as if that is an indication of how good you are or not, then you're never going to have the momentum that's going to actually kill whoever you're, you know, whatever it is you're trying to learn, that's actually going to get you to where you want to be, wherever that might be. So that's point number one, is to focus on momentum and understand that movement, purposeful movement, is the cure for fear. It's one cure for fear. Number two, and I think this one really, really, really just changed my mindset about things. The number two point has to do with intention. And what I'm talking about here is, if you leave your growth to randomness, you'll always be stuck in mediocrity. And when I heard that quote, it really helped me understand the truth and the number of truths that have always been there in my life. Namely, the fact that a lot of what has happened in my life thus far, both positively and negatively, particularly positively, it's never been random. Yes, there's been some luck here and there, but it's never been random success. I don't have any memories of random success, and neither do you. As you think back, how many times did you have a point in your life where something randomly good happened to you that didn't come with some stipulations? It's tough to really think about it. It's tough to think. Maybe you met the person of your dreams, but then you have to continue to be, and maybe you were the person of their dreams, but then you have to continue to be that person, or you have to continue, you know, the image changes. So they're not always that same image you had in your head. Or maybe you meet the person, maybe you get the job of your dreams. 9 times out of 10 on day 900 at that workplace, you're not going to have that same level of enthusiasm unless you have created an opportunity to where you are purposefully moving, not leaving your success, not leaving your results up to randomness. There's an episode that we released quite a while ago called How to Master the Entropic Machine. And when we talk about the topic of entropy, we're talking about what the reality of randomness equates to. And I used to love randomness when I was younger. You know, I used to love serendipitous moments and operating based on happenstance and just whatever happens, happens. And the older I get, the less and less I like that. Why? Because I understand that the consequences, you know, and the emotions of letting the chips fall as they may is far too great for me to even reckon with. I can't take that risk. It's a risk that's too much for me. That's a risk that I can't engage with. I can't take that risk. So as you evaluate your fear, your failure, your frustration, keep these two things in mind. Keep in mind what level of momentum you have. You know, whatever that scale is for you, if it's a 10, if it's a 10 out of 10, if it's a 1 out of 10, if it's a, you know, 20%, if it's 30%. I always like to think of the analogy or the comparison to a phone battery. You know, how much, what is the chance that you're going to run out of power? You know, are you on 20%? Are you on 17%? 17% is not a good phone battery if you care that much, if you got to get something done on your phone. it's not giving you a whole lot of confidence. But if you're on 92%, then you're like, okay, I can move a little bit. I'm all right. I can take a hit. I can take this app running in the background and, you know, downloading data all day long. I can do that. So the second point around, you know, overcoming this failure, fear, and frustration has to do with seeing beyond the now and understanding, you know, how to live intentionally as opposed to just these random occurrences, hoping that they're going to work themselves out. There's a book out there that everybody knows about called Hope is Not a Strategy. Hope is not a strategy, indeed. And it's important that we remember this as creatives, as designers, as, you know, practitioners of our craft, because at the end of the day, our visions and our forecasts of the future should have some emotion attached to them. They should have some feeling. And I think that's the tough part, that as I reflect on my past 4 or 5 months of very, 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 very intense work, there's been very few times that I've worked as hard as I've worked in the past 4 to 5 months. If you know me personally, then you know that you haven't been able to get in contact with me. If you know the rhythm of this podcast, then you know that there haven't been as many episodes. Why? Because I've been working very hard. And as a result, I've been forced to consider the distance between output, production, and emotion. And I'm realizing that the more and more that the output and the input are distant from positive emotions, the less excitement I feel about the future. If you're churning butter all day long, if you are out in the fields, if you're just like getting to it and you don't have any vision of maybe, here's a good example. If you're hunting, if you know me personally, you know, I've been obsessed with the show on Netflix called Meat Eater. I watched every single episode when I was sick for 2 weeks. And in watching every episode, I realized like, wow, like this is the rawness of humanity. This is the rawness of going and killing and eating yours. And, you know, despite what people's opinions might be on the topic of hunting, I'm also quite confused about how I feel about all the nuances there. But the point here is that as a hunter, when you're sort of evaluating the 3, possibly 4, possibly 5 days of stalking your prey. So if you think back to the analogy and where it connects, maybe your prey is graduated from a certain school. Maybe your prey is getting a promotion. Maybe your prey is getting, you know, recognized by some award or getting recognized by some, you know, conference or giving a talk, giving a speech, whatever it may be. It's not really about, you know, whatever your dopamine release is going to be, getting the girl, getting the guy, getting the engagement ring, getting, you know, the first date out the way, like whatever it is, you're looking for dopamine is what you're looking for. In the same way that a hunter looks for his prey and looks for dinner that night, it's tough to really stick it out if you don't know what emotion you're even waiting for. You know, I've never actually been hunting, so it's quite intriguing for me to understand that emotion that might be running through their veins where you're out there in 37 to 45 degree weather, hiking around, looking for stuff that really is not, you don't have to do this in 2020. You don't have to go hunt. You don't have to go be a hunter and a gatherer. Yet you're out there for 1, 2, 3, 4 days. And as someone who's never been, you don't know the emotion attached to forecasting to something positive, to what that smell is going to be like when you actually cook, or what the taste will be like, what the pride will be like when you feel like you earned your dinner. Like these sorts of things, in the same way with any sport or any activity that has a dopamine response attached to it, if you're so distant from that dopamine, you're not going to want to continue. So a practice that I've developed to sort of help in this way is to start thinking about what the emotions are that you're interested in for your future. If you're interested in certain levels of emotion with your future, we often talk about where we want to be, how much money we want to make, what job we want to get, which studio we would love to work at, how we want our studio to run, how many people we want to work, what projects we want to work on. And we're not ever really thinking about the emotions that we want to elicit and elucidate over those periods of time. So the more distant you are from those emotions, the more distant you are from those positive, you know, experiences in the future, the less it's going to help you to really get through the fear, the frustration, and the failure, because you don't know any other feeling. So I challenge you in your days and weeks and months leading into, you know, the next quarter, whether you're in business or the next semester, whether you're in school, whatever it is, start thinking about what emotions you want to experience in the next year, what emotions you want to experience, what experiences you want to have, what memories do you want to gain in the next 2 years, next 3 years, and start thinking about it in terms of months. In the next 18 months, what do you want your best memory to be? And that'll get you on a path that's a lot different than thinking about how big and how frustrated you are at the challenge you're in front of right now. Till next time, we'll talk to you soon. One more thing, if you liked any of this, if you were interested, if this really got you inspired, if this got you enthused, if you felt a new sense of vibrancy listening to me talk for the past 20 something odd minutes, then I really encourage you to go to educated-guest.com, subscribe to our newsletter, become a part of this community, understand a little bit more about why we do the things we do and what we talk about in addition to the podcast. And also, if you're into Instagram and that sort of thing, we are on there at educated_guests. And we'd love to hear from you. Talk to you soon. All right.